Hello, fellow story champions. My name is Simon Brooks. Welcome to Lindy Line, a story podcast. Here you will find old stories, some written by the likes of Kipling and Robert Louis Stevenson. Ancient folk and fairy tales retold for a modern audience of families, and original short stories I have penned myself. I'll be retelling some of the classic folk and fairy tales, and some of the stories you may not be familiar with. I'll be taking you around the world with these tales, and there may be some history too. You never know. Are you comfortable? Then sit back and listen. Once, when all creatures could understand one another, and the realm of magic was apparent as the clouds in the sky, and the fae were still seen sprinkling fairy dust into the eyes of those who were to see them. In those long ago times, there were stories. Are you comfortable? Then sit back and listen. Hello, how are you? Happy 2023. I feel like I'm in a science fiction movie. Anyway, it's a bit chilly here right now, only 10 degrees Fahrenheit, which is minus 11 degrees Celsius. But Mo and I went for a walk, although just up the road this morning. The house across from us was still partially covered in snow. Patches of the dark shingles peer through the white winter, which matches the white siding. Trees are silhouetted down the road with orange light, merging slowly to the pale blue of dawn. The sky is clear and it is cold. Then something moved. Something caught our eye, or my eye anyway. From our neighbour's house across the street, the prancing shadow of a squirrel made its way over the telephone lines, stopping to check itself. And then it continued its dangerous dance until it got to the centre of the road, the centre of the wire, tail all a quiver, and then two other squirrels joined it, one from each side. They stopped in the middle like a string of birds. They looked down at us, and I wondered if they would throw nuts or something. But instead, the one in the middle snapped its tiny little fingers four times, and they broke out into song. First of all, they sang, "Old MacDonald had a farm," and then they sang, "Oh, there ain't no bugs on me," which makes sense given how cold it is. When they finished, I clapped and Mo barked, and then the squirrels took off. Well, because Mo's tail and my ears were getting jolly cold, we headed back to the house. Mo got her treat, and I got a nice hot cup of tea. Have you heard the story of the magical turban, the whip, and the magic carpet? It comes from Turkey. It was first published back in 1896, which is a very long time ago. It was before my granddad was born. It's about two brothers, alone in the world, and their parents had left them some money. There once was, a long time ago, far from you and me, two brothers who were alone in the world. The half of the money their parents had left them went to the oldest of the two boys, who bought himself a shop and worked hard at making a living. The other half went to the younger brother, who frittered it away, spending it carelessly. And when his money ran out, he would go to his older brother for handouts. The older brother got tired of this, and so he sold everything that he had and sailed away to a distant shore to be rid of his little brother. However, the younger brother got wind of this and stowed away on board the very same ship. And when they came face to face, well, there was not much the older brother could do. They made the most of the trip, and when the ship landed, the older brother went to get a couple of fine donkeys for them to travel on. The younger brother waited and waited. He looked at the ocean. He waited and waited. He looked at the plants that grew nearby. And he waited and waited some more, and decided that maybe his older brother was lost, and so went looking for him. He walked and walked and picked some of the flowers. He walked and walked and stopped to chat with strangers. He walked and walked some more until he had seemed to spend 6 months crossing this field, which, when he turned to see how far he'd come, he saw that he could have kicked a stone to where he had set off from. So he walked until he came to the base of a hill where three boys were fighting and arguing. "What are you fighting about?" "Our father died and left us a magic turban which makes you invisible, a magic carpet and a whip that you use on it to take you wherever you want to go. I'm the oldest and they should all belong to me. I'm the youngest and they should belong to me. I'm the middle child and I was the favourite. I should get them. I have an idea, said our young man. I will make a dart from this stick and I'll throw it as hard as I can. Whoever gets the dart first will get the turban, the carpet and the whip. That's a great idea. The three boys waited for the dart to be thrown and took off after it. Our young lad grabbed the turban and put it on his head and went invisible. He picked up the whip and, jumping on the magic carpet, said, "Take me to where my brother is." And it did. When the carpet landed, the young man awoke and looked around. He removed the turban from his head and placed it in his satchel with the whip and rolled the carpet up and tucked it under his arm. Walking down the street, a town crier called out, "The Sultan has said whomever can discover where his daughter vanishes to at night will be given her hand in marriage and will be given great tracts of land." "Me," called out the young man, "I'll do it. I'll find out where the princess goes at night." The young man was led within the great palace and shown to where he was to guard, if you will, the princess, the Sultan's daughter. And he was left with a warning. If he failed, he would lose his head. I'm not really sure how one loses one head, but it worried the man not a bit. Day turned to night, and the princess pretended to sleep. She peeped between her long eyelashes until she saw the young man was asleep. She got up, taking a candle with her, and then carrying her light, she made her way through a hidden side door. The young man was not sleeping at all. He leapt up with the stealth of a mouse being hunted by a cat, placed the magic turban upon his head, making him invisible, grabbed his bag with the whip and tucked the carpet under his arm and followed her through the door, just making it before it closed after him with a silent click. He followed after the Sultan's daughter, but drew up short, faced as he was, by a genie, an ifrit. The Sultan's daughter was sitting on a small shield called a buckler, and the ifrit was placing it upon his head. The young boy leapt, unseen in his magical turban, onto the buckler. "What are you doing, princess? I nearly dropped you." "I did nothing. I am just sitting here. It is you that nearly dropped me, Lala." The young man held tight and stayed quiet.
"You are heavy. You have put on weight."
"I have not. I am the same weight as I was yesterday. No heavier, no lighter, you rude creature. You're behaving very strangely, Lala." The ifrit shrugged its shoulders, muttered under its breath, and began walking towards a forest. They came to a garden filled with silver trees decorated with diamond flowers. The lad reached out and snapped a twig and a diamond from one of the trees. As he placed it into his bag, the plants began to wave and moan.
"A child of man is torturing us. We are being tortured."
The ifrit stopped and looked about. The princess did the same. "There's no one here but us."
"We shall continue."
The lad marvelled at the beauty of the garden, with such pretty plants. Then they continued through the woods and came upon another garden. This had trees of gold, decorated with gems and jewels. Again the lad broke off a twig and some gems, and again the trees called out,
"We are being tortured."
The ifrit stopped.
"What's going on? I see no one."
"A young man has been placed to guard me, but I left him sleeping. Maybe it's his spirit that follows us." But we know the young man was sitting right next to the princess on that buckler. The genie strode on and back into the forest. It wasn't much longer when the young man saw a huge palace with turrets and minarets and a great golden domed roof rising into the star-studded sky. He saw attendants rushing out from the great doors. One had a pillow, and on the pillow there were a pair of slippers decorated with topaz and purple jade. The ifrit took the shield from his head and lowered it, and the attendants helped the princess off the buckler. The lad carefully stepped between them. As the princess placed one of the shoes on her feet, the lad took the other shoe and placed it in his bag, unnoticed. "Where has the other slipper gone?" The attendants searched, but could not find it. "Bring me another set of slippers." As she was placing one of those on, the lad again took the twin of it and placed it in his bag. "What is going on? Where is the other shoe? This is ridiculous." She kicked the slipper from her foot and entered the palace barefoot, the lad staying close to her, still unseen in his magical turban, with a carpet under his arm. The hall, which they walked into, had high ceilings painted in gold. Pillars with vines rose up to meet the roof. Chandeliers shone out light from a thousand candles glittering through gems. A winged pari, a fairy of sorts, flew down toward the princess and bowed before her. "You are late. What took you?" "Odd things have been happening," the princess told the pari what had happened. "The trees calling out, the ifrit behaving strangely, the slippers going missing." "Never mind. Maybe it is your imagination. Let us drink." The pari clapped its hands and two attendants came running. They balanced a tray on each which stood a tall decorated glass. "Some sherbet, my princess. That should make you feel better." The young lad stepped out and knocked the attendant who was handing the drink to the princess. The glass fell to the floor and shattered. The lad picked up a few pieces and stuck it in his bag, along with his other treasures. "You see, strange things are happening. It doesn't feel right. I should go back." The pari's brows creased. "This is unusual, but you shall stay. Bring some food." Still more attendants came out, carrying trays with food. They placed on the table a tray of kebabs, bowls of soups, kofta, pilau rice and dolmas. The boy had never eaten dolmas before, but he found that he really enjoyed the buttered and spiced rice wrapped in grape leaves. He ate as much as the pari and princess, stealing away a bowl, knife, fork and spoon. The pari, seeing the food and wares disappearing at great rate, looked at the princess. "Maybe you should go." The pari called for Lala, the ifrit, and then leaning towards the princess to kiss her. The lad leapt between the two of them and pushed them apart. They both fell backwards. "Yes, this is unusual. Something is not right. Leave." The ifrit lowered the buckler and the princess stepped onto it and the two left. The young man, however, still unseen in his magical turban, reached up and took a great sword which hung on the wall. Drawing it from the scabbard and stepping toward the pari, the palace began to shake. The attendants began to cry out and wail. Then a voice boomed from the walls. "Our leader is dead. Our ruler is killed." The lad, pulling out the whip, gently touched the carpet as he unrolled it and jumped on it and said, "To the palace, as quickly as you can." When the Sultan's daughter came back into her room, there before the door was the young lad, sleeping. She stared at him, snoring, lying on his back, his foot shaking a little. She took a needle and pricked his foot, but the lad did not rouse. In the morning, the princess shook the lad awake. "Come, it is time for you to lose your head." "Not quite. I have to answer to the Sultan first." He was led before the great ruler and asked if he had seen what had happened to the princess. "I did, but before I tell you everything, can we invite all the townsfolk to hear what I have to say?" "Well, of course." The Sultan called the townspeople into the great hall. Once the hall was full, the young man began to tell the Sultan about the ifrit, the silver and gold trees, the glasses and sherbet, the shoes, the pari. "He is lying. He saw none of these." "But I did look," and the young man began to empty his bag of the silver twig and the diamond, the golden twig and the gems, the glass shards which were still sticky from the sherbet, two shoes, a bowl, a knife, fork and spoon, and a piece of a dolmas. Then the lad told the Sultan that the pari was no more, that as he left he heard the palace itself call out that the creature was dead. The young man did not mention the sword. The princess began to cry. At first, people thought that she must have been in love with the Peri, but it turned out her tears were tears of joy because the curse, which had caused her to visit the Peri nightly, was over. The young lad leapt into the crowd, pushing his way through. "Where are you going? You are to be rewarded," called out the Sultan. But the boy ran through the throng until he stood before his brother. The two siblings were reunited. The older brother couldn't believe what his younger brother had been through. The younger brother was thrilled to see his sibling again and introduced him to the Sultan and the princess. A great feast was thrown. It lasted for 40 days and 40 nights. When the Sultan told the lad he could marry the princess and have a tract of land, the lad said, "I'm too young to marry a princess, but if the princess likes my brother, maybe they could be married. And as to the land, please give that to my brother. I'm happy with my turban, the whip, and my magical flying carpet." And so it was. I have to say that at the feast, I tasted dolma for the first time, and like the lad, found it to be a new favourite food of mine. Maybe if you go there, you'll be able to try some too. Did you like the story? I hope so. There are other variations of that story in other places of the world. There is a longer version, if you can imagine that, from Germany called the 12 Dancing Princesses. Instead of one princess, there are, yes, you guessed it, 12. And each night they dance their shoes to ribbons. Only the king doesn't know why they need new shoes each morning. And it's a soldier who goes to find out what the ladies are doing. Do you think the princess danced with the Peri? If so, what do you think it would be like dancing with a winged creature? Maybe you could draw a picture of yourself dancing with something that has wings. Maybe it would be a fairy or a Peri. Maybe you'd want to dance with an eagle or a dragon, or maybe a dragonfly. Maybe you could write your own story about a flying creature and what you would do if you met it. Would it be friendly? I hope it would be. Maybe it is captured somewhere and you get to rescue it. Or maybe you just come across it and it's at home and you become friends and have all sorts of adventures together. Well, I hope it warms up here and I hope it's warm wherever you are and that I get to take Mo out for a longer walk. Maybe we'll see the same squirrels in the woods, and maybe they'll sing Dancing Queen by ABBA, or that old song, Jenny Jenkins. Well, be well, stay safe, and share your smiles with those you meet. I hope to hear from you soon. Well, thanks for listening to Lindy Line, a story podcast. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. By simply subscribing and telling your friends about this podcast will help, but also please leave a review on Podbean, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to this, as it helps others find these stories. Most podcasts have advertisers. We don't. If you want to drop a price of a dog biscuit for Mo and the cost of a cup of tea for me, that would be lovely. It's hungry work in the woods. You can also become a patron and pay as little as $1 to as much as you think it was worth. If you become a Patreon patron at www.patreon.com/SimonBrooks, you get extra resources and outtakes. You might even see a photo or two of Mo, my wonderful rescue dog, and photographs of our adventures together. Hashtag in the woods with Mo. Once, when all creatures could understand one another, and the realm of magic was as apparent as the swords worn, there were stories. I hope you enjoyed today's story. This is where my telling ends.